Collar here, as he will be every Friday throughout the football season. Mr. Purple Insider himself just on it right now. Purple Insider's great. You got the mailbag today. You still looking back at the Giants game, looking at the 49ers. Stories, interviews, podcasts. It's a must. PurpleInsider.com. Matthew, always a pleasure. Let's say we're chatting Monday morning about the Vikings' decisive victory over the Giants, and now we're talking right now. What more do you know about what the Vikings did against the Giants that maybe didn't know in the first 24 hours after the game?
Well, first of all, I'd be calling local jewelers, seeing who was going to do the Super Bowl rings for this team.
Yep.
Well,
sure.
Well, I mean, I think that the blueprint to win around Sam Darnold is pretty simple. It's actually not that different from what it was with Case Keenum or even the way that the Vikings played in 2019, where they ran the ball a lot and they asked Kirk Cousins to just do his job that season. And I feel like it's the same sort of thing for Sam Darnold, where the most impressive thing about last week was, of course, the 44-yard throw to Jefferson is breathtaking, and that's the arm talent that he has. But I was impressed by a few different times where I thought it's going through his mind to whip it into traffic, and he didn't. And he decided to, you know, throw it underneath and keep the chains moving. There was a little rollout where he just tossed it to Ty Chandler, and then Ty Chandler's super fast, and he got them a first down. They have good playmakers who can, you know, get first downs and move the chains, even if you're not trying to play hero. And I would guess if they were able to beat San Francisco that Sam Darnold didn't have any stupid and terrible interceptions or any strip sacks where he was scrambling around like a lunatic and took bad sacks, that he continued to play with some sense of rhythm. But, you know, I think another thing that was impressive too is, of course, we're going to look at the San Francisco D-line and go, how good are they? Nick Bosa last year had 6 pressures against the Vikings, and it was actually one of his worst graded games by PFF. He did a decent job, but he still had 6 pressures. But it's not like Sam didn't see pressure last week. I mean, they gave up quite a bit from Dexter Lawrence.
Right.
And he was able to manage it and manage the pocket well. And then, of course, Aaron Jones just showed again, this man is different. He has destroyed the Vikings over and over again. Now he's on their side, and he still looks like that guy. But again, San Francisco, very tough against the run with one of the best linebackers in the NFL. So how do they, you know, match up with the run game to stay ahead of schedule for Sam Darnold so he doesn't have to do too much? And if you told me that they won, I would guess that one of the exact reasons why they won was that Aaron Jones played really well and they were able to stay ahead of the sticks.
Okay, I want to get to Jones' next question, but let's go back to part of what you said, avoiding the stupid, terrible interception. When you face a team with this caliber of talent, not only on the field, but in coaching, he's going to have to do a little bit more, okay? And it always should be avoiding those dumb plays which have plagued him. Do you know enough, do you think, understanding the talent on this team, the coaching on this team, that he is capable and will be able to do it on a semi-regular basis where he has to make, against a team like San Francisco, 5 or 6 key throws that against the Giants, yes, they are helpful, and they are helpful in leading to a thorough domination, whereas a lot of times against one of the 2 or 3 best teams in the league, no matter who your quarterback is, unless he makes 6 or 7 key throws, difficult throws, precise throws, understand the defense, you just aren't going to win.
No, you're exactly right. And that is such a great test for Sam Darnold because, you know, San Francisco is going to score some points. I don't know how many, but they're going to score them. It will not be 6 like it was against the Giants last week. I really like the improvement of this Vikings defense, but the way that San Francisco moves the ball, the way they completely demolished the New York Jets, that just hasn't changed. They have the number one play caller and offensive mind in the entire NFL, which means exactly what you said, that there are going to have to be situations with Sam Darnold where he decides to let it rip. But I do think the good thing for last week is that he got a taste of those situations because, okay, in the fourth quarter, we all know it's 28-6 and we're all just, you know, going for a little more popcorn in the press box, not paying too much attention. But early in the game, there were some spots with some tension, especially the fourth down. I thought it was a really good decision from Kevin O'Connell to say, hey, go get that fourth down. Like, we're not going to play super safe just because Sam Darnold's our quarterback, we're going to go for a touchdown to be able to throw that dart in there to Justin Jefferson and then to score on a 99-yard drive where he had to throw them there. They got a couple of good runs, but he also had a couple of very good in-rhythm throws to get them a 99-yard, you know, touchdown drive. That's a big deal for somebody when they're just trying to get their bearings with a team and feel like the team has their back and they can be confident in those spots. The thing is that it's the 49ers, though. Like, it is a different level of challenge when you're talking about that. I thought, though, the one thing that is working to their advantage is that last year, Kirk Cousins had one of the best games he's ever had against San Francisco and against this defense. And I think that Kevin O'Connell does understand extremely well the principles of San Francisco's defense because he played them all the time when he was out with the Los Angeles Rams. And that really showed for last week. So I think with Sam Darnold, what he needs to understand in those big spots, number one, it is never a bad play to throw to Justin Jefferson, ever. I mean, we have seen him do things that just seem like they defy gravity. It's always a good play. But also to trust Kevin O'Connell can get people open because he can. And we saw that last week in some of the key spots in the red zone where he gets that throw off to Jalen Naylor where he's open. So believing in the play and where the ball is supposed to go and letting it rip, I thought was something he did really well in week one. And if he carries that over, like you said, I don't think we're talking about 17 games of what he did last week, but carry it over enough to keep them in this one and give yourself a chance.
Matthew Collar from Purple Insiders with us as he is every Friday. Let's go to Jones. And I reminded myself this week, I looked it up again. So Jones, who has been just a great player for the Packers and finished very strong, he was due a lot of money. I mean, that's what happens. We watch this all the time in the league where you pay one of your guys and near the end of the contract, it becomes a big number and you try to find a way to renegotiate. Or sometimes you're staring at a pay cut. And he was due $12 million with the Packers last year, but because of cap concerns, it was about $17 million. They offer him six. I think it was four guarantee, two incentives, where the Vikings offered him six and then $1 million incentive. Jones was mad. We've watched this so many times. You know this well, where a player has a lot of success with a team, but sometimes even when the money isn't that much more, and a million is more, I'm not downplaying it, they're so ticked off at their team if they're playing well that they go somewhere else. What adds the irony, and again, the Vikings will face this scenario in a couple years too at some point. Then they bring in Josh Jacobs. I'm sorry, he's just not as good as Aaron Jones. And they give him 4 years, 48. Now, the next couple years, you know, are not guaranteed as much as 4 years, $48 million sounds. But, man, that's the part of free agency where if you can get guys, Matthew, who still have some juice left in them, and they're mad at their other team, and it suits your needs, and it doesn't always work out perfectly, but it did here, because, man, that guy is tantalizing. I mean, he is a big-time asset to this team.
100%. Penny-wise, pound foolish would be how I would describe the Green Bay Packers in this instance. I totally agree. I don't think that Jacobs can play at all in Aaron Jones's level, and we saw that last week, because it's not just the big exciting runs. It's even just the 12-yard carry where it should have been six, and that would have been a good run, but it's 12 with Aaron Jones, and it's an easy first down. And it's been several years since we've seen the quarterback for the Vikings just hand it off, do nothing, and get a couple of first downs. That's how bad the running game has been. And I think Kevin O'Connell last week was probably being like, see, guys, it wasn't the scheme. It was the running back. We'll see a better test here this week. But this guy, he's one that you just kind of marvel at for everything about him. Reminds me of Patrick Peterson a lot in the way that he's such a great vocal leader for them, such a high, high intelligence player. And then you watch him, and he's not a huge guy. But his his toughness is unbelievable. And I think, you know, we see this in basketball and some sports where some guys have this natural ability to shoot the basketball, and you don't know where it came from. God gave it to him. And I think that's Aaron Jones with his vision, where for some reason he just sees things faster than anybody else, where a lot of running backs wouldn't have been patient, or they would have just run right into the tackle, and he waits and then bounces it out. I mean, he just gets you extra yards, whether it's after contact or creating more space for him. And all of this ties so much into why the offense can succeed if Sam Darnold can avoid catastrophic mistakes because you can mm-hmm. run the football. And I was fairly impressed with Kevin O'Connell sticking with the run
yes.
at different times
I
in
agree.
That game. And we have kind of begged him to do that. Stick with it. Keep going. And that's what I would say for this game is it might require even more patience because San Francisco can get ahead of you and make you feel like you're down by 58 points when you're down by 7 just because they're so good. But you have to stick with Aaron Jones and trust him. And I think he could be even more of a part of the passing game this week. He caught a couple passes, but it wasn't difference-making stuff like he had done in Green Bay. And that's why, when we talk about this team and what it was supposed to be, Vegas had him at 6.5 wins. And I just thought, really, with all these guys, the guys they brought in, they mm-hmm. added so much talent.
Yeah.
Which, where did they get that cap space, by the way? I can't remember how they were able to do that. But you just really saw all the acquisitions they made in the offseason. Grenard, Van Ginkel, what a player he is. And Cashman was really good last week. Stephon Gilmore played a ton of snaps. This team, I think, is more talented than people gave it credit for because so much of the focus was on one guy, Sam Darnold, in all of the offseason discussion, and Jones is a huge part of that.
Okay, let's talk about some of those defensive players. Let's talk about the injuries, and let's talk about why San Francisco seemingly never drops off. I know they haven't won a Super Bowl yet. They've been extraordinarily close. They go deep in the playoffs year after year after year. The brilliance of Matthew Coller and Purple Insider continues in moments on CCO. Right back with Coller. We talked a lot. You write about it. You speak about it. You interview folks about the defensive changes the Vikings made in the offseason. They lose a star in Danielle Hunter, but they made a financial decision on him and, most importantly, Kirk going to Atlanta, and they add players in multiple areas, right? It's not just always defense for defense, but let's be honest. All of a sudden, you add Grenard, who had a lot of success in Houston. You draft Dallas Turner by giving up quality assets, by the way. You move up to seize on the second toughest position to land a star, a defensive pass rusher. And then you sign this guy who's filled with versatility, Van Ginkel. It's one game. It's the Giants. But if you want to feel good about those three players, go back and watch that game again.
Yeah, not only that. I mean, they all have histories. Right. I mean, Grenard had 12.5 sacks last year. Van Ginkel was a top 10 PFF outside linebacker. Stephon Gilmore won defensive MVP. I think that's a part of the defense that's very different from past years. Even last year when they were better is when you go across the defense, find me one guy that we don't know anything about and you're just praying. There isn't, at least in the starting unit. In years past, it was, maybe if Cam Dantzler just takes the magical next step or something.
Yes.
I think what Brian Flores probably got a little tired of that. But, I mean, they did find Ivan Pace as someone who's established himself now. But everyone across the entire defense at every position has a history that we can look back at and go, this guy knows how to do his job. Even someone like Jerry Tillery had a decent season as a rotational player for the Raiders last year and, comes through in the first game and makes a difference on a handful of plays. These are all veteran guys who know what they're doing. And I think when you talk about guys who have these histories, it's much more predictable on a week-to-week basis. And the other thing is, too, that you know exactly what their strengths and weaknesses are, and you can ask them to do a lot more, I think, if you're changing up coverages from week to week. I just don't think you have to try to protect somebody because, that guy's only been in the league for, 6 weeks. He's not going to know what he's doing if we try to call X, Y, or Z. No, you've got Harrison Smith out there doing checks to Blake Cashman, who's been in the league forever, doing checks to Stephon Gilmore, who's been in the league forever. And I think that that's a big difference maker. And we saw it really in week one. Flores was not forced to show his hand a whole heck of a lot. They rushed four way more than they did last year. And I do think that that's a big advantage from last season, where I think Flores was just mashing the keyboard, trying to find any button that worked. And now he can actually call the defense that he wants to call. And as we look going forward, if you can get through this first section of the season that could be so difficult here with 49ers and with Houston, you go forward after that and you go, there's a lot of either unreliable or just flat out unproven quarterbacks that start to show up after the beginning of the season. Guys like Will Levis, Trevor Lawrence is always up and down on a week-to-week basis, but certainly not proven yet. Caleb Williams didn't look like he knows how to play in the NFL yet. And if you start to talk about, well, if the defense can look like this, can you look at this team as potentially a playoff team? And I've always thought fringe playoff team in the best case scenario. And, you know, I think the defense will have to drive some wins to get them there.
Injuries. Jordan Addison injures the other ankle last week, goes out of the game. He's out. Questionable. And, you know, I mean, you have no idea. Some teams are casual about questionable. Some teams, if they're on the questionable list, that means they're out. But questionable, Ingram, O'Neal, Smith. So take everybody here. Addison losing him, that means more Naylor. By the way, Naylor needs a better nickname than Speedy. Okay? I mean, come on. I mean, yeah. I mean, we know you're fast, Sora, but I don't know, 500 guys in the league. Take me through the guys. Most people are going to say Ingram. Oh, no, anything but that. But then O'Neal and Smith and how they would impact the game if they are out. With Addison, we know he's out.
Yeah, so, I mean, with Addison being out, I think that it's not just one guy that's going to have to step up. It's kind of a combination of everybody. And one thing that is good about Jalen Naylor is during the preseason, they had him practicing everywhere. So he was sometimes taking reps with the first team as wide receiver three. But then when they would run out the second team, he would play the role of Justin Jefferson or he would play the role of Jordan Addison. So I don't think he's stepping into something that's super foreign for him. Brandon Powell has established himself as a fairly nice and useful receiver. He had a couple of catches last year against the 49ers. So they're going to need, you know, Trent Sherfield's been in the league before. Tristan Jackson had a great preseason. But with Hockenson and Addison out, I mean, that is a much tougher challenge. Those are Pro Bowl caliber players, first-round draft picks. And even just watching some of the routes that Addison ran last week, you're like, man, this guy, if we can keep him off the roads, I mean, he is a really, really impressive player. And so to have him out, it makes the job so much tougher. And I think we'll land on the shoulders of Kevin O'Connell to scheme these receivers into places where they don't just have to win their one-on-one by themselves because they don't have the guy who can really do that in Jordan Addison. With Ed Ingram, I mean, whoever they would play instead would be an upgrade, probably Dan Feeney, who they signed in the offseason. And I've got to think that Dalton Risner, when he comes off IR, is going to come off as a starting right guard. I mean, I've had enough. Have you had enough?
Enough.
I think everyone's had enough.
Yes,
I mean, this is a guy who's allowed more pressures than any other guard in the NFL since he came into the league. And I do not understand how we even got past about week six of 2022 with the level of play. This is way, way below acceptable. And he just got ragdolled over and over again. I know it's Dexter Lawrence. Dexter Lawrence usually doesn't rack up that many pressures in 24 dropbacks. I mean, there was the lowest PFF grade among guards in the entire NFL. You just can't have that.
Stop.
You can't survive that.
Right?
So, I mean, even Dan Feeney, who was not great in his previous stops, is better than what we saw last week. So this might be one of those shadow injury kind of things where we just actually really wanted to bench him, but we don't want to make it look that way. I think that's probably what everyone's rooting for, honestly. It was really, truly that alarming that he looked like that. But aside from that, I mean, I expect Harrison Smith's going to play, and they're mostly healthy going into this. But I am very curious how O'Connell schemes around the fact that he doesn't have someone as talented as Jordan Addison.
So here you just look at the 49ers of late. Last year, Super Bowl. Year before, conference championship. Year before, conference championship. Go back another year, and it's the Super Bowl, right? I know they've lost players. And they've traded guys for top draft choices. They've lost defensive coordinators. And they have the amazing break of Purdy being so great. And they're paying him basically nothing. That's all going to change after this year. And it's one game. But that was thorough against a team with a lot of talent with the Jets. And who knows how Rodgers is with Achilles. But there's a lot of talent on that Jets team, especially on the defense. You know, we sit here and say the Super Bowl hangover, especially if you lose, I don't get the sense they're going to face it this year. Do you?
No, I really don't. I mean, there is a chance that they start to wear down toward the end of the season. We kind of saw that from Philadelphia last year. What was Philadelphia? Like 10-1 last season.
Yep.
Yeah, and then they, I think the health just kind of added up there a little bit. But, you know, with Kyle Shanahan, what can push you through also is great scheme. I think that it's a combination of having the best schematic mind in the entire NFL is where it all starts. But also, I mean, they have four or five positions where you could argue that their guy is the best guy in the entire universe. Trent Williams might be the best left tackle of all time. If he's not, he's in the conversation. Nick Bosa is astonishing. He's the highest paid player at his position in the entire league, an unstoppable force. Deebo Samuel is an all-pro. Brandon Ayuk is making, what, $30 million
yes.
to be wide receiver?
To be the second best wide receiver.
It's unbelievable. And then, you know, I think the other thing, too, is they understand exactly. Oh, and by the way, I didn't even mention George Kittle. He would have been the first guy named on half the teams in the league. I mean,
how about Fred Warner? How good he is.
I mean, Javon Hargrave in the middle.
Right? They got a lot.
He had 64 pressures last year. So watch out, guards. But, I mean, they have an offensive line that's physical. But I really think, aside from all the talent, that they understand exactly who they are. I mean, they have this system that Shanahan has run for so long. It is physical. It is violence. They get players who are violent lunatics up front that just are really good run blockers that can create extra space for whoever is back there. I mean, it's the dream scenario. It's exactly what you're trying to be. And as the Vikings start to build more around J.J. McCarthy in the future, this is the model. This is exactly what you're trying to be.
Great stuff, man. Be well. We'll talk next week.
Yep, thanks for having me, Jeb.
Matthew Coller on Twitter during the game. He's a must-follow. He'll have immediate reaction right after the game. Good stuff all week. He's really good. Coller here, as he will be every Friday throughout the football season. Mr. Purple Insider himself just on it right now. Purple Insider's great. You got the mailbag today. You still looking back at the Giants game, looking at the 49ers. Stories, interviews, podcasts. It's a must. PurpleInsider.com. Matthew, always a pleasure. Let's say we're chatting Monday morning about the Vikings' decisive victory over the Giants, and now we're talking right now. What more do you know about what the Vikings did against the Giants that maybe didn't know in the first 24 hours after the game?
Well, first of all, I'd be calling local jewelers, seeing who was going to do the Super Bowl rings for this team.
Yep. For sure.
Well, I mean, I think that the blueprint to win around Sam Darnold is pretty simple. It's actually not that different from what it was with Case Keenum or even the way that the Vikings played in 2019, where they ran the ball a lot and they asked Kirk Cousins to just do his job that season. And I feel like it's the same sort of thing for Sam Darnold, where the most impressive thing about last week was, of course, the 44-yard throw to Jefferson is breathtaking, and that's the arm talent that he has. But I was impressed by a few different times where I thought it's going through his mind to whip it into traffic, and he didn't. And he decided to, you know, throw it underneath and keep the chains moving. There was a little rollout where he just tossed it to Ty Chandler, and then Ty Chandler's super fast, and he got them a first down. They have good playmakers who can, you know, get first downs and move the chains, even if you're not trying to play hero. And I would guess if they were able to beat San Francisco, that Sam Darnold didn't have any stupid and terrible interceptions or any strip sacks where he was scrambling around like a lunatic and took bad sacks, that he continued to play with some sense of rhythm. But, that, you know, I think another thing that was impressive, too, is, of course, we're going to look at this San Francisco D-line and go, how good are they? Nick Bosa last year had 6 pressures against the Vikings, and it was actually one of his worst graded games by PFF. He did a decent job, but he still had 6 pressures. But it's not like Sam didn't see pressure last week. I mean, they gave up quite a bit from Dexter Lawrence.
Right.
He was able to manage it and manage the pocket well. And then, of course, Aaron Jones just showed again, this man is different. He has destroyed the Vikings over and over again. Now he's on their side, and he still looks like that guy. But again, San Francisco, very tough against the run with one of the best linebackers in the NFL. So how do they, you know, match up with the run game to stay ahead of schedule for Sam Darnold so he doesn't have to do too much? And if you told me that they won, I would guess that one of the exact reasons why they won was that Aaron Jones played really well and they were able to stay ahead of the sticks.
Okay, I want to get to Jones' next question, but let's go back to part of what you said, avoiding the stupid, terrible interception. When you face a team with this caliber of talent, not only on the field but in coaching, he's going to have to do a little bit more, okay? And it always should be avoiding those dumb plays which have plagued him. Do you know enough, do you think, understanding the talent on this team, the coaching on this team, that he is capable and will be able to do it on a semi-regular basis, where he has to make, against a team like San Francisco, five or six key throws that against the Giants, yes, they are helpful, and they are helpful in leading to a thorough domination, whereas a lot of times against one of the two or three best teams in the league, no matter who your quarterback is, unless he makes six or seven key throws, difficult throws, precise throws, understand the defense, you just aren't going to win.
No, you're exactly right, and that is such a great test for Sam Darnold, because you know San Francisco is going to score some points. I don't know how many, but they're going to score them. It will not be six like it was against the Giants last week. I really like the improvement of this Vikings defense, but the way that San Francisco moves the ball, the way they completely demolished the New York Jets, that just hasn't changed. They have the number one play caller and offensive mind in the entire NFL, which means exactly what you said, that there are going to have to be situations with Sam Darnold where he decides to let it rip. But I do think the good thing for last week is that he got a taste of those situations, because, okay, in the fourth quarter, we all know it's 28-6 and we're all just, you know, going for a little more popcorn in the press box, not paying too much attention. But early in the game, there were some spots with some tension, especially the fourth down. I thought it was a really good decision from Kevin O'Connell to say, hey, go get that fourth down. Like, we're not going to play super safe just because Sam Darnold's our quarterback. We're going to go for a touchdown to be able to throw that dart in there to Justin Jefferson and then to score on a 99-yard drive where he had to throw them there. They got a couple of good runs, but he also had a couple of very good in-rhythm throws to get them a 99-yard, you know, touchdown drive. That's a big deal for somebody when they're just trying to get their bearings with a team and feel like the team has their back and they can be confident in those spots. The thing is that it's the 49ers, though. Like, it is a different level of challenge when you're talking about that. I thought, though, the one thing that is working to their advantage is that last year, Kirk Cousins had one of the best games he's ever had against San Francisco and against this defense. And I think that Kevin O'Connell does understand extremely well the principles of San Francisco's defense, because he played them all the time when he was out with the Los Angeles Rams. And that really showed for last week. So I think with Sam Darnold, what he needs to understand in those big spots, number one, it is never a bad play to throw to Justin Jefferson, ever. I mean, we have seen him do things that just seem like they defy gravity. It's always a good play. But also to trust Kevin O'Connell can get people open, because he can. And we saw that last week in some of the key spots in the red zone where he gets that throw off to Jalen Naylor where he's open. So believing in the play and where the ball is supposed to go and letting it rip, I thought was something he did really well in week one. And if he carries that over, like you said, I don't think we're talking about 17 games of what he did last week, but carry it over enough to keep them in this one and give yourself a chance.
Matthew Collar from Purple Insiders with us, as he is every Friday. Let's go to Jones. And I reminded myself this week, I looked it up again. So Jones, who has been just a great player for the Packers and finished very strong, he was due a lot of money. I mean, that's what happens. We watch this all the time in the league where you pay one of your guys and near the end of the contract, it becomes a big number, and you try to find a way to renegotiate, or sometimes you're staring at a pay cut. And he was due $12 million with the Packers last year, but because of cap concerns, it was about $17 million. They offer him six. I think it was four guarantee, two incentives, where the Vikings offered him six and then $1 million incentive. Jones was mad. We've watched this so many times. You know this well, where a player has a lot of success with a team, but sometimes even when the money isn't that much more, and a million is more, I'm not downplaying it, they're so ticked off at their team if they're playing well that they go somewhere else. What adds the irony, and again, the Vikings will face this scenario in a couple years too at some point. Then they bring in Josh Jacobs. I'm sorry, he's just not as good as Aaron Jones. And they give him 4 years, 48. Now, the next couple years, you know, are not guaranteed as much as 4 years, 48 million sounds. But, man, that's the part of free agency where if you can get guys, Matthew, who still have some juice left in them, and they're mad at their other team, and it suits your needs, and it doesn't always work out perfectly, but it did here, because, man, that guy is tantalizing. I mean, he is a big-time asset to this team.
100%. Penny-wise, pound foolish.
Yes.
Would be how I would describe the Green Bay Packers in this instance. I totally agree. I don't think that Jacobs can play at all in Aaron Jones's level, and we saw that last week, because it's not just the big exciting runs. It's even just the 12-yard carry where it should have been 6, and that would have been a good run, but it's 12 with Aaron Jones, and it's an easy first down. And it's been several years since we've seen the quarterback for the Vikings just hand it off, do nothing, and get a couple of first downs. That's how bad the running game has been. And I think Kevin O'Connell last week was probably being like, see, guys, it wasn't the scheme. It was the running back. We'll see a better test here this week. But this guy, he's one that you just kind of marvel at for everything about him. Reminds me of Patrick Peterson a lot in the way that he's such a great vocal leader for them, such a high, high intelligence player. And then you watch him, and he's not a huge guy. But his his toughness is unbelievable. And I think, you know, we see this in basketball and some sports where some guys have this natural ability to shoot the basketball, and you don't know where it came from. God gave it to him. And I think that's Aaron Jones with his vision, where for some reason he just sees things faster than anybody else, where a lot of running backs wouldn't have been patient, or they would have just run right into the tackle, and he waits and then bounces it out. I mean, he just gets you extra yards, whether it's after contact or creating more space for him. And all of this ties so much into why the offense can succeed if Sam Darnold can avoid catastrophic mistakes, because you can run the football. And I was fairly impressed with Kevin O'Connell sticking with the run at different times in that game. And we have kind of begged him to do that. Stick with it. Keep going. And that's what I would say for this game, is it might require even more patience, because San Francisco can get ahead of you and make you feel like you're down by 58 points when you're down by 7, just because they're so good. But you have to stick with Aaron Jones and trust him. And I think he could be even more of a part of the passing game this week. He caught a couple passes, but it wasn't, you know, difference-making stuff like he had done in Green Bay. And that's why, you know, when we talk about this team and what it was supposed to be, Vegas had him at 6.5 wins. And I just thought, really, with all these guys, you know, the guys they brought in, they added so much talent.
Yeah.
Which, where did they get that cap space, by the way? I can't remember how they were able to do that. But you just really saw all the acquisitions they made in the offseason. Grenard, Van Ginkel, what a player he is. And Cashman was really good last week. Stephon Gilmore played a ton of snaps. This team, I think, is more talented than people gave it credit for, because so much of the focus was on one guy, Sam Darnold, in all of the offseason discussion, and Jones is a huge part of that.
Okay, let's talk about some of those defensive players. Let's talk about the injuries, and let's talk about why San Francisco seemingly never drops off. I know they haven't won a Super Bowl yet. They've been extraordinarily close. They go deep in the playoffs year after year after year. The brilliance of Matthew Coller and Purple Insider continues in moments on CCO. Right back with Coller. We talked a lot. You write about it. You speak about it. You interview folks about the defensive changes the Vikings made in the offseason. They lose a star in Danielle Hunter, but they made a financial decision on him, and most importantly, Kirk going to Atlanta, and they add players in multiple areas, right? It's not just always defense for defense, but let's be honest. All of a sudden, you add Grenard, who had a lot of success in Houston. You draft Dallas Turner by giving up quality assets, by the way. You know, you move up to seize on the second toughest position to land a star, a defensive pass rusher. And then you draw, then you sign this guy who's filled with versatility, Van Ginkel. It's one game. It's the Giants. But if you want to feel good about those three players, go back and watch that game again.
Yeah, not only that, I mean, they all have history. Right. I mean, Grenard had 12.5 sacks last year. Van Ginkel was a top 10 PFF outside linebacker. Stephon Gilmore won defensive MVP. I think that's a part of the defense that's very different from past years. Even last year when they were better, is when you go across the defense, find me one guy that we don't know anything about and you're just praying. There isn't, at least in the starting unit. In years past, it was, well, maybe if Cam Dantzler just takes the magical next step or something.
Yes.
I think what Brian Flores probably got a little tired of that. But, I mean, they did find Ivan Pace as someone who's established himself now. But everyone across the entire defense at every position has a history that we can look back at and go, this guy knows how to do his job. Even someone like Jerry Tillery had a decent season as a rotational player for the Raiders last year and, you know, comes through in the first game and makes a difference on a handful of plays. These are all veteran guys who know what they're doing. And I think when you talk about guys who have these histories, it's much more predictable on a week-to-week basis. And the other thing is, too, that you know exactly what their strengths and weaknesses are, and you can ask them to do a lot more, I think, if you're changing up coverages from week to week. I just don't think you have to try to protect somebody because, well, that guy's only been in the league for, you know, 6 weeks. He's not going to know what he's doing if we try to call X, Y, or Z. Now, you've got Harrison Smith out there doing checks to Blake Cashman, who's been in the league forever, you know, doing checks to Stephon Gilmore, who's been in the league forever. And I think that that's a big difference maker. And I we saw it really in week one. Flores was not forced to show his hand a whole heck of a lot. They rushed four way more than they did last year. And I do think that that's a big advantage from last season, where I think Flores was just mashing the keyboard, trying to find any button that worked. And now he can actually call the defense that he wants to call. And as we look going forward, if you could get through this first section of the season, it could be so difficult here with 49ers and with Houston. You go forward after that and you go, there's a lot of either unreliable or just flat out unproven quarterbacks that start to show up after the beginning of the season. Guys like Will Levis, Trevor Lawrence is always up and down on a week to week basis, but certainly not proven yet. Caleb Williams didn't look like he knows how to play in the NFL yet. And if you start to talk about, well, if the defense can look like this, can you look at this team as potentially a playoff team? And I've always thought fringe playoff team in the best case scenario. And, you know, I think the defense will have to drive some wins to get them there.
Injuries. Jordan Addison injures the other ankle last week, goes out of the game. He's out. Questionable. And, you know, I mean, you have no idea. Some teams are casual about questionable. Some teams, if they're on the questionable list, that means they're out. But questionable, Ingram, O'Neal, Smith. So take everybody here. Addison losing him, that means more Naylor. By the way, Naylor needs a better nickname than Speedy. Okay, I mean, come on. I mean, we know you're fast, Sora, but I don't know, 500 guys in the league. Take me through the guys. Most people are gonna say Ingram. Oh no, anything but that. But then O'Neal and Smith, and how they would impact the game if they are out. With Addison, we know he's out.
Yeah. So I mean, with Addison being out, I think that it's not just one guy that's going to have to step up. It's kind of a combination of everybody. And one thing that is good about Jalen Naylor is during the preseason, they had him practicing everywhere. So he was sometimes taking reps with the first team as wide receiver three. But then when they would run out the second team, he would play the role of Justin Jefferson, or he would play the role of Jordan Addison. So I don't think he's stepping into something that's super foreign for him. Brandon Powell has established himself as a fairly nice and useful receiver. He had a couple of catches last year against the 49ers. So they're going to need, you know, Trent Sherfield's been in the league before. Tristan Jackson had a great preseason. But with Hockenson and Addison out, that is a much tougher challenge. Those are Pro Bowl caliber players, first-round draft picks, and even just watching some of the routes that Addison ran last week, you're like, man, this guy – if we can keep him off the roads, I mean, he is a really, really impressive player. And so to have him out, it makes the job so much tougher. And I think we'll land on the shoulders of Kevin O'Connell to scheme these receivers into places where they don't just have to win their one-on-one by themselves, because they don't have the guy who can really do that in Jordan Addison. With Ed Ingram, I mean, whoever they would play instead would be an upgrade, probably Dan Feeney, who they signed in the offseason. And I've got to think that Dalton Reisner, when he comes off IR, is going to come off as a starting right guard. I mean, I've had enough. Have you had enough?
Enough.
I think everyone's had enough.
Yes,
I mean, this is a guy who's allowed more pressures than any other guard in the NFL since he came into the league. And I do not understand how we even got past about week six of 2022 with the level of play. This is way, way below acceptable. And he just got ragdolled over and over again. I know it's Dexter Lawrence. Dexter Lawrence usually doesn't rack up that many pressures in 24 dropbacks. I mean, there was the lowest PFF grade among guards in the entire NFL. You just can't have that.
Stop.
You can't survive that.
Right?
So, I mean, even Dan Feeney, who was not great in his previous stops, is better than what we saw last week. So this might be one of those shadow injury kind of things where we just actually really wanted to bench him, but we don't want to make it look that way. I think that's probably what everyone's rooting for, honestly. It was really, truly that alarming that he looked like that. But aside from that, I mean, I expect Harrison Smith's going to play, and they're mostly healthy going into this. But I am very curious how O'Connell schemes around the fact that he doesn't have someone as talented as Jordan Addison.
So here you just look at the 49ers of late. Last year, Super Bowl. Year before, conference championship. Year before, conference championship. Go back another year, and it's the Super Bowl, right? I know they've lost players. And they've traded guys for top draft choices. They've lost defensive coordinators. And they have the amazing break of Purdy being so great. And they're paying him basically nothing. That's all going to change after this year. And it's one game. But that was thorough against a team with a lot of talent with the Jets. And who knows how Rodgers is with Achilles. But there's a lot of talent on that Jets team, especially on the defense. You know, we sit here and say the Super Bowl hangover, especially if you lose, I don't get the sense they're going to face it this year. Do you?
No, I really don't. I mean, there is a chance that they start to wear down toward the end of the season. We kind of saw that from Philadelphia last year. What was Philadelphia? Like 10-1 last season. Yep. Yeah, and then they, I think the health just kind of added up there a little bit. But, you know, with Kyle Shanahan, what can push you through also is great scheme. I think that it's a combination of having the best schematic mind in the entire NFL is where it all starts. But also, I mean, they have four or five positions where you could argue that their guy is the best guy in the entire universe. Trent Williams might be the best left tackle of all time. If he's not, he's in the conversation. Nick Bosa is astonishing. He's the highest paid player at his position in the entire league, an unstoppable force. Deebo Samuel is an all-pro. Brandon Ayuk is making, what, $30 million
to
be wide receiver?
Second best wide receiver.
It's unbelievable. And then, you know, I think the other thing, too, is they understand exactly. Oh, and by the way, I didn't even mention George Kittle. He would have been the first guy named on half the teams in the league. I mean,
how about Fred Warner? How good he is?
I mean, Javon Hargrave in the middle.
Right? They got a lot.
He had 64 pressures last year. So watch out, guards. But, I mean, they have an offensive line that's physical, but I really think, aside from all the talent, that they understand exactly who they are. I mean, they have this system that Shanahan has run for so long. It is physical. It is violence. They get players who are violent lunatics up front that just are really good run blockers that can create extra space for whoever is back there. I mean, it's the dream scenario. It's exactly what you're trying to be. And as the Vikings start to build more around J.J. McCarthy in the future, this is the model. This is exactly what you're trying to be.
Great stuff, man. Be well. We'll talk next week.
Yep, thanks for having me, Jeb.
Matthew Collar on Twitter during the game. He's a must-follow. He'll have immediate reaction right after the game. Good stuff all week. He's really good.